Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, welcome to episode 11 of Digital Divination. At least I hope I got that number right. I'm pretty sure it's 11.
We're double digits for sure.
Yes, yes. I think we hit double digits last time, so this should be right. First of all, Ron, I want to tell you a happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what did you end up doing? Did you go out to Snoqualmie Falls? Is that what you were saying?
We did. No, we went out to Snoqualmie Falls for my birthday. We've got a guest in from out of town who's been with us for a few weeks, and I think we just talked her into staying maybe even another couple weeks longer, which is great. It's my twin's birth mom, and she's
right. That's what I figured.
Wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful. She hasn't seen a lot of the beauty that this area has to offer, and we've got the Snoqualmie Falls, which are fairly near, just a short drive away. And so we ended up going up to take a look at the falls, but I brought my bicycle and my kid's bicycle, and then we biked all the way home.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, and we got to go places that we'd been on that same trail, but not nearly as far. And so we got to see a lot of things we hadn't seen before. It was really good. It was a lot of fun.
Of a ride is that?
Just a little bit over 10 miles.
Oh, that's not too bad then. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a railroad grade. The trail used to be a railroad, so it's actually not particularly steep or switchbacky because there used to be a rail line on it many years ago. So it's very pleasant. We saw an awful lot of people that were out, a lot of other families that were out, and that was really cool, kind of enjoying the great weather and the great day.
Now, so your birthday was yesterday. Sunday, and today is Stephanie's birthday.
Yes, she is she's one day younger than I am.
Yeah, that is amazing.
And I have not given up every ability I have, including yesterday, to slip in some comment about, well, when you get to my age, then you'll...
So did you guys like meet at a joint birthday party or something?
No, we could have. No, we met back in high school, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
We were sort of high school sweethearts who went our separate ways for a little bit, stayed friends. And then I think both of us kind of realized we never dated anybody else as good as our first love. And so we ended up getting back together many years later. And the rest is history. So,
wow. Very cool. So yeah. My wife and I were high school sweetheart as well. But we didn't, we got married quicker. We didn't wait many, many years. We just kind of waited. Wait until after college. So,
did you date all the way through?
Off and on. You know, I went to school on the East Coast and she went to school on the West Coast. So I would come back to visit, but you know, in between, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like an exclusive. We weren't seriously seeing anybody, but it wasn't like we were not trying to. You know, we still communicated and stuff like that. So, yeah, so it was really cool. And then when I ended up getting stationed back here in Seattle for my first tour of duty on a icebreaker in Seattle. And that's when we end up getting engaged and getting married shortly after that. So,
oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So that was really cool.
So how many years have you been married? We just hit 18. How many?
This is really going to show my age. 32.
Ooh, yeah, we'll get 30. There. We'll get there.
That's, yes. Yeah. I tell you, the first 18 are the toughest. And, no, it's, you know, it's funny when we hit, I think when we hit 25, you know, we kind of did a special trip and all kinds of stuff like that, because I thought that was a big milestone. And since then, we really haven't thought much about it. It's like, oh, there's another year. Okay. You know, so it's kind of interesting. All right. So, you know, a couple episodes ago, actually in episode 8, we had talked generally about how and why Paizo conducts different play tests, because the new play tests coming out for Starfinder, and so in this episode we're going to kind of circle back and talk a little bit more about the specifics of this. Now, I was kind of reading through the paperwork on this, and the first thing that really struck me reading the playtest notes is this playtest is from the Starfinder Tech Revolution hardcover that is scheduled for release in 2021 and will be full of technology-based options for every type of Starfinder character.
Yep, that is, it's primarily, there's going to be an awful lot in the book. The two key things that we're playtesting for this is the new Nanosite class and then the rules for mechs that are included in this.
Yeah, so but there's going to be stuff for all the classes too, not just, you know, so it seems like very often in these, not very often, in one of the core books, the rule books, they introduced three new classes, then they had some additional archetypes and things for other classes, then some new equipment and themes and stuff. But here... Is this kind of like analogous to like ultimate equipment or something like that, or
it's actually, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff in it, but really armory is our ultimate equipment. What this is going to be is solving problems and, you know, sort of meeting challenges with a distinctly tech based focus.
Okay.
And so I think that to the extent you've got, for example, a new, anything new for the soldier class, it's not going to be about how you can suddenly cast spells in order to be a soldier, right? It's going to be how you use the tech that you use better.
I see. So it's going to be kind of tech-based things. And so then I imagine down the road, there's going to be a magic-based book for all the classes too?
Well, now that's actually... There are some predictions of the Starfinder schedule that you can make based on what they've done so far.
Yes.
And that seems to be a safe one. That is probably the second safest one that you could make. I think the safest one would be, well, they did a book about the Pact Worlds and they did a book about near space. There's the third range is the Vast, and are they going to do anything about the Vast? I mean, that's seems safe. I would say seems safe.
Yeah, no. But the interesting thing for me is that other than like this playtest, I had not heard anything about this particular core book being announced. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they kind of slid that in. We're playtesting something. Oh, and it's from a new core book that we're not talking about. So
this one certainly says right there, it's a Tech Revolution playtest.
Right. Well, and I didn't realize that was a book. I thought that was just what they were calling the playtest until I was reading the fine print.
So, yep.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
And then one thing that you can expect in this, especially with our last playtest, even though that they playtested the three new classes, they had to bring in some extra equipment rules for shields because Vanguard's used shields a lot. Mm-hmm. And then the actual way that got carried through the rest of the book gave a lot of other classes abilities that kind of touched on the things that were introduced with injection weapons, for example, or the shields, or, you know, the Witchwarper spells and how some spells are now both Witchwarper and Mystic or Witchwarper and Technomancer or so on. So I think that the stuff that you see in this playtest isn't going to just stand alone. In addition to standing how it's going to be in the playtest, it's also going to carry through some of the other game elements as well.
Right. Well, let me just say that, you know, on No Direction Network, that there was actually, I think, already a more detailed kind of analysis of the playtest that a couple of folks have done, I think, with No Direction Beyond. So we're not going to go super in depth into break down the Nanosite or the mechs, but I think we'll just kind of talk in general about kind of our impressions of things. Does that sound okay? And and kind of where we might see this coming from a player or GM perspective, or how we might want to build this into a campaign we're doing from a developer or sort of perspective. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
All right. So let me start with talking a little bit about the Nanosite class. There's a couple of things that I find kind of interesting about this. And the first one is that it's a full BAB class. You know, so right now, you know, we have for full BAB classes, we have the Soldier, we have the Solarian, and We added the Vanguard, and so this is also a full BAB class. And another interesting thing about this, again, just kind of looking through it, is that the key ability score is Constitution, similar to the Vanguard. And so that allows, I think, some kind of interesting things you can do with it. So it, in addition to having this cool adaptability, which I'll go into a bit, it also gives you quite a bit of staying power, similar to the Vanguard, you know, because you are able to pump up Constitution, which is going to give you more stamina, but that Constitution modifier also can be added to your damage, similar to the Vanguard. And so that's like two ends of the trifecta for a good frontliner. Yet this character also has quite a bit of utility on top of that. When you look at it in terms of skill ranks, one of the issues that you run into with a soldier, with a Salarian, somewhat with a Vanguard, is they don't have a lot of skill ranks available at every given level. You tend not to have very high intelligence, so that really limits a lot of what they can do. Here, the Nanocyte, at least in the playtest, has 6 plus the intelligence modifier. Mm-hmm. So more akin to some of the skill-heavy classes, though probably not going to get much higher than 6 for a lot of builds.
Well, on top of that, the skill ranks, their class skills are all the really useful ones, right?
Right.
Athletics, computers, perception, mm-hmm. all the stuff you'd want to put things into are the mm-hmm. ones that they get as class skills.
Yeah, so I'm thinking just on those things alone, this is like... I could do some really fun stuff with this. And then when you look at kind of the base archetypes or the base versions they have, so when you pick your Nanite class, you have to kind of pick a specialization similar to what you would do with other classes. And so they call these faculties.
Right.
Which is kind of an interesting word.
Well, especially because they're the most... they're the most magical sounding things to show up in a book called Tech Revolution, right? They're all about how you break down your body and recreate it in new ways, or how you infest your foes with grievous injuries. Like, I'm like, this is, you could reflavor any of these to be overtly magical, but it's very interesting that they've really pushed it to be technological.
Well, in a lot of it, you know, when you look at it, it's the focus of, if you're made of nanites, what are things that you can do? You know, basically,
yep.
You know, and so looking at the different flavors, so there's discorporation, which has a lot to do with kind of modes of mobility. There's infestation, which basically allows you to become like a swarm and have swarm like attack abilities. There's obliteration, which is one of my favorites, which is basically allowing you to disrupt the molecular structure of others, and which is kind of, you know, when you look at the Vanguard with, you know, how it works, it kind of works that way, but basically very attack oriented. Redirection, which has to do quite a bit with combat maneuvers. And then there's the regeneration, which is giving you the ability to heal yourself and others. Yep. So it's kind of neat that within this one type of class, there's very distinct flavors you can take depending on what you want to do with the character. So there's a lot of range, I think, in terms of what you can do.
Oh, yeah. And on top of that are all the Nanocyte knacks, right? The other mm-hmm. tricks that you build as you get up. I think you could easily have a party of Nanocytes where no mm-hmm. two characters play the same.
Yes. And because of this range of skills that you could have, and because of the different things you can do in terms of attack and defense and healing, you know, a full party of Nanocytes could probably take on a lot of different adventures fine, you know? You know, think of if you have the Discorporation Nanocyte, right? So they're doing all your infiltration and work like that. You know, you have your Regeneration one that's healing everybody, healing stamina on top of that, which is really cool because there's not a lot of stamina healing that you can do. Obliteration for damage. You know, combat maneuvers is something I'm just now getting to appreciate more. I have a I think it's a level 8 or 9 Vanguard now. And with the additional bonuses they get to combat maneuvers, you know, the trip attacks, the disarms and different things like that, you know, moving people around, it becomes much more palatable than it without all the bonuses. You know, if you haven't specialized in combat maneuvers, it's really tough as a soldier or other class to really do a lot with them. But I'm becoming to appreciate those quite a bit more. So, yeah,
and especially from a design, like an adventure design perspective, mm-hmm. if you've got an adventure where all the encounters have a lot of other fun stuff going on, you know, crackling electricity between two mm-hmm. posts, and you've got, you know, cliffs or little, you know, elevator shafts or things that are kind of going up and down, being able to move people around or knock them down or, you know, mm-hmm. knock them into pits, et cetera. I mean, that becomes a lot more exciting. It's a lot more fun to do.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And, you know, the fact that you get some additional bonuses to that really, and there's actually more armor, more weapons, too, that can provide, and some other things that can provide bonuses to help get your ability to actually be successful, you know, quite a bit higher. So when also looking at the nanocytes, so each of these different types of nanocytes also has three forms that they can use, and then your NACs kind of amplify these forms. Mm-hmm. So you have a sheath array, so basically where the nanites can reinforce your body. You have a cloud array where they can kind of spread out from you and do things. And then you have a gear array where they can actually create stuff. You know, so think about, you know, this like a utility belt where you need something all of a sudden, and then you can go ahead and do that. And, you know, with the gear array, you know, you have to make this UPB investment early on so that then you have some pool of UPBs in your nanite gear that you can go and arrange different ways. And then, you know, you can change that by situation as they come up. So, you know, so oftentimes, you know, you're in the middle of an adventure and you say, oh, man, you know, we really could use a 15-foot ladder. Well, shoot, now as a nana, you could become a 15-foot ladder. No, well, that's handy. You know, so different things like that. So it looks like on the surface that this is going to be, I think, a really fun class because of its customizability, both in the character builds themselves, then once you have them, the players actually play those characters.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I think makes the nanocyte look as expansive as it is because it gives you the three different builds right off the bat. I mean, I remind mm-hmm. you that the Solarian from the base book had solar armor, solar weapon, and it wasn't until Character Operations Manual that they got the ranged solar attack. Mm-hmm. And then mechanics in the base book, their AI was either the drone or the where they improved their
exocortex.
Mind. Exocortex. And in Character Operations, they got a third one, right? They got their experimental prototype.
Right, So
I think having three options has really kind of become a standard. And the fact that the nanocyte gives you all three right out the bat is mm-hmm. was one of the things that makes it really feel like a really broad-based class.
Well, and, you know, now that you mentioned that, it makes me wonder if that's only out for the playtest. And then when it goes live, you have to pick one.
I don't know. There's always, I guess then they know they can sort of put something in their back pocket for a later project, I suppose. I suspect not, but.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I but it's the kind of thing you don't know from the playtest what's going to kind of end up, you know, in the final version.
Right.
So, you know, we did have some questions about the nanocyte class that came out, and Brian in particular had asked what our takes are on the pop culture and literary influences of the nanocyte and what its place in the game would be.
Oh, man, that's a really good question. When I initially heard about the nanocyte, and then even when I'm reading it, it's really kind of T-1000-y in my head.
Right. That's really the first thing I thought of. you know.
But being able to change a shapeshifter is a broad RPG archetype, right? Somebody that can change their form into something else. A druid that can take the shape of animals or gain animalistic features in order to do stuff. You know, sorcerers who reshape their blood. I think there's kind of a long tradition of shape changers in RPGs. And this is actually kind of a sci-fi version of that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because some of the abilities here, for example, you know, allow you to change your facial features and aid in disguise and things, you know, in higher levels, actually, to become even more like an individual that you've seen and stuff. So, you know, I agree that very much the shapeshifter's in there. I'm just trying to think what other type of cultural references, sci-fi references, would fit in other than the T-1000, which, you know, basically creating weapons out of different things. Now, what it doesn't do, the T-1000 doesn't create projectile weapons.
True. There's something about the nanites being expended, I guess, when they leave your body that is part of the genre. I just read, it's actually kind of a modern day sci-fi-ish book that is about people who are infested with nanites, and when they die, the nanites kind of leave in a cloud, and then they discard, they're out of energy, right? They draw their energy for being in the person. And that I remember thinking, you couldn't really shoot out your nanites in this world. I mean, it's not a thing people do in the world, but I'm like,
in the playtest, you don't do that either. You actually have to absorb a battery or ammunition in order to feed whatever weapon that you create. So you're not shooting at the nanites. You actually have to get the which I thought was kind of interesting. You know, one of the things I thought of, and I haven't seen this movie yet, it's the one with Vin Diesel. It's Blood something or another. Bloodspot,
Bloodborne,
I think.
Bloodshot.
Bloodshot, yeah, Bloodshot, based on a graphic novel, right? So that's one where he's infested with nanites that are doing basically stitching him back together, which is pretty much what the regeneration one, you know, how it describes. Except for the regeneration one, you can also stitch together your allies.
Other people, right. And you can use your constitution modifier to do it, which you already want to be good for the class.
Right.
That's, yeah.
Right. So that, you know, that's another kind of reference that would fit in there. I'm trying to, like, the redirect one. I can't really, you know, that's like, you know, if you're thinking of, you know, like Jedi's redirecting things, I don't know.
But
there's already redirect skills for projectiles, but not really for combat maneuvers. You know, I can't really think of one.
Well, and there might be a real blind spot that I've got with a lot of this is anime. And I know there is robust fields of anime, and I just don't follow anime, that where a lot of this sort of, it would not surprise me one bit if every piece of this class that you and I can't think about how you might do that is in fact a core piece of some anime type. That's
yeah. I think both you and I might be a little too old for that. My oldest was really into anime quite a bit. She would probably have all those answers. Where is she when I need her? You know, another thing that Ryan kind of brings up here is that, you know, there are still fewer classes in Starfinder than are in the Pathfinder core rulebook. And this seems to be the most out there class yet. And I kind of wonder if, even if in this new core book that we might get a couple other classes that are way out there as well.
I don't doubt that. I think that that's really going to depend on how the nanosiders received. I think if it gets if it's universally panned for being too weird, then I think we can count on not having weirder classes. But because I think Starfinder is kind of class, maybe even class starved. I was about to say class starved. I think that actually might be a good term, because as flexible as all the classes are, there still just aren't very many. And so people who want to try something new might be, this is new and I love it. Give me more. I think that's more likely to be the attitude that people have, and it makes it more likely that they'll do weirder things in the future.
Yeah, I kind of hope so. You know, I don't. I look at the new classes that came out with the com. you know, I've played a Vanguard, I've played a Biohacker, and I actually like both those quite a bit. I haven't really got my head wrapped around a Witch Warper yet. And I got to tell you, I'm much more excited about the Nanocyte than playing a Witch Warper.
Oh, see, I still feel like the Witch Warper is the one of those three that I feel like I could have a lot of fun with and and give a try. You know, we just don't play enough, John. We need to play more.
I know. That's, you know, I was just looking at my schedule. There's a bunch of conventions coming up, and I'm GMing like 13 different games across like four conventions coming up here in the next month and a half or so. And I'm not planning on playing at all. So.
No.
But, you know, part of it is because there's limited time in the day. And so I have to choose if I'm going to GM or play. Yeah. And I'm spending more time GMing.
Well, can I ask you a question about that? I know that it used to be the case for a lot of conventions that you get your admission and sometimes even part of a hotel room paid for if you GM'd a lot. But that can't be the case for online conventions, is it?
Yeah, so for online, you can still get free signups if there's a charge for it. There's definitely not as much, like for PaizoCon, Gen Con, you know, for the big conventions, if you did enough, you would get a free hardcover. You would get a voucher for the store, Paizo store, and you could get a portion of a room. Now, for online, the in-kind gift they gave you would be a PDF, and they still gave you some vouchers at the store. And plus, you get one of the neat things I like is they do give you a nice GM boon at the cons.
Oh, that's
that
nice.
Is useful for things. And the one for, well, I better not say, the one for PaizoCon and GenCon was really good.
Oh, neat.
That's all I'll say. It's really good for Starfinder.
Glad they're treating them right.
Yeah, so.
All right, the other half of Tech Revolution, of course, is mechs. And this has gotten kind of a lot of feedback. It's been sort of excoriated in a lot of ways I've seen as being just super complicated, and you've got to add some serious fractions. But having looked at it more closely, I have a hard time seeing how to meet the needs of the system they want to have with anything but kind of this new layer of complexity. I was initially real down on the complexity when I heard other people were down on it, but having read through it, I'm not so sure. What do you think?
You know, when I'm looking at figuring out the mech levels and stuff like that, it doesn't seem overly complex, especially if you compare it to Starship Building. Mm-hmm. I think Starship Building, you have quite a few options and things you got to do. Now, one of the things with the mech building is setting the mech level, you know, based on your character level, and then the creature levels that you're going against, setting the mech levels. I think that's a little different, but it's, again, that's more kind of on the GM or the developer side, you know, putting it together. And I don't think that's too onerous. You know, if you're designing a campaign to build, you know, to figure out what level of mech and what they can do, it doesn't seem like a lot. Now, I think from a player perspective, where it's like, I just want to create cool mechs and use them, then yeah, maybe that's a little more complicated than what they're used to. But generally, the way this is laid out, I don't see, this seems like it's going to be more of the GM-driven aspect of it. You know, you're going to give the broad parameters to the players, and then they can go ahead and do something with it. Similar like, you know, building a starship, someone's going to give you the build points and tell you kind of what frame you can use, and then you'll work from there. You're not going to start from scratch as a player.
The thing about designing an adventure or an encounter with mechs in it is there's two ways you want to go. I think you want to be able to provide, here is the mech level and here's the points that you use to build it, the mech points that you use to build it, and let the players go ahead and build the mech the way that they want to. And they get sort of really just elbows deep in these rules and they're really excited about spending every point. Or you make one that is going to be okay for them. It's going to get the job done, where as an author, you provide it and say, look, for those groups that just don't want to do all of the build, they can still do the adventure. They just don't have to worry too much about the mech's building part. You see what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about, you know, Mex is a GM, you know, and if you have a scenario that includes Mex, then it's pretty much going to be like, going to have to be like a Mech versus Mech scenario, or a Mech versus some, you know, gigantic creature like a Godzilla type of scenario, kaiju type of scenario, because you just can't, you can't really bring a Mech to bear against anything smaller. It doesn't
there's something in the playtest it mentions, well, a Mech is probably ought to be deemed a CR 3 points higher than what its tier is. And I'm looking at the rule. There's no way, right? You could pretty much obliterate even a group of PCs three levels higher with some of this stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking that's a little too low. You know, now I understand, you know, they're trying to shoehorn it into the system, but I really think that when we look at mechs, it's going to be a mech specific situation, scenario, adventure, whatever it is. And you're going to go about, okay, we're going to collect our gear to make a big mech or to capture a mech only because we have to go against some, you know, it's like you're in Pacific Rim and it's like you have the rest of the world, but we have these big kaijus we have to fight. So we got to build these big mechs. We don't use them for anything else but to fight the kaiju.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, now they could do other things probably, but they're too important to do, you know, and that's similar to, you know, when you look at, like there's an adventure on Damalco where they have mechs and they have kaiju, and you know there's a society there that controls the mechs, and they just don't lend them out to people to do whatever because there's too limited number of them and they're too important. You
super
know,
valuable,
to
yeah.
Do things, you know. So when you're looking at that, it's a lot like starships where, you know, you're not going to bring a starship down and obliterate a. You know, group of adventures, but there are times when you need to take a starship and go somewhere and do something. Oh, and then you'll encounter a starship-sized creature, you know,
yep.
Or another starship. You know, it's not like, oh, you encounter this very, very small thing that, you know, then you'll all go out and whatever, you know, it's starship versus starship. So I think that's where mechs are really going to come into play. Now, that said, I think mechs are going to be way more fun than starships.
Yeah, I think that they've got a lot more different sort of levers to pull in the rules, right? Because with starships, you've got a lot of different, it looks like you've got a lot of different ways you can build. But as you learned writing for the starship book, right? Mm-hmm. Once you've got the power core you really feel like you need, and maybe sometimes the weapons or tricks that you feel like you need, you just don't have a lot of points left over. Mm-hmm. The build is a lot more limited than it looks like at first glance. And I really wonder, not having rolled up my sleeves and made a bunch of mechs yet, whether mechs feel like they are as open in their build and open in their play as they look like on paper, or whether they actually have the sort of leading you the same direction that the starship rules do.
Well, you know, like anything that's resource constrained, there's an economy of points that you get to deal with. But I think that one of the big differences, if you look at like the environments that mechs can be used in. When you look at starships are in space. You know, when you look at mechs, you know, you can have mechs in space, you know, mechs on the ground, mechs underwater, mechs doing various things, specialized mechs for doing things. So I do think that it'll be quite a bit more interesting in terms of what you can do in terms of adventures with mechs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could come across them a lot more frequently.
Right, and they don't have to be all massive sizes. You know, you have smaller mechs that one person controls, and you have, you know, large mechs that, you know, four, five, six people can control. And I do like the fact how the number of people you have in a mech dictates the number of actions the mech can take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a lot different than, you know, with starship battles. You can have a bunch of people, but you still have set roles and kind of limited number of things that happen in a given round. With mechs, it seems like, you know, your whole team can do a lot, or you could have a bunch of them doing a little bit. So I guess similar to like what squadron fights might be, you know, if you're all individual mechs.
Yeah. I think so. But I do think that it's nice that they've thought about that and put in some limitations for not having a ton of people in the mech, because your initiative, I believe, is the lowest of all the people that are in it. So mm-hmm. If you've got some people that are that are really holding you back, they can really hold you back in when you're using a mech.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing I was thinking about is, you know, traditionally we think of mechs as, you know, big ambulatory, you know, large robot looking things that are very humanoid in shape. When I was a kid growing up, one of the book series I really liked was called Bolo. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. I am not, one. No.
Yeah, and they were basically they were super tanks. The super tanks were Bolos. Oh. And so one of the things we played is we introduced the super tanks into Gamma World, into like a post-apocalyptic environment where, you know, you would cobble, you would find these things had been left in some storage facility or something. And so your team's out there getting them ready. And then you go out. Well, sure enough, there's other people that have them and you get into these big battles. And so that's one of the things that came to mind is like, you know, you could build super tanks that use the mech rules, but aren't mech shaped per se.
Right. You know,
still the same thing. So again, just kind of getting at the variety of things that you can do with them is what I'm really excited about.
Oh, that's, I guess we'll see when this starts to come out and the adventures start to come out, mm-hmm. how they're used sort of both formally in what Paizo produces and how people will be able to hear how people are using them in their own games. And I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Which kind of brings to mind another question, which you may or may not be able to answer fully. It seems to me oftentimes when they introduce cool new things in these hardcovers, that there's some application in an AP also as well in the near future, sometimes even concurrently. Do you think there's a possibility that could happen with this hardcover?
No, I mean, certainly it's a possibility. There's going to be places for those sorts of stories, but I can say, I shouldn't say.
Yeah, no, I kind of figure that, you know, I always try to prod you a little bit here, but I really don't. I don't want to get you into trouble. I hear the lawyers are all over that kind of stuff.
I know. So. I actually have so much fun doing this. I hate to think I get in any trouble for it and can't do it. Oh, so
yeah, I know. Well, I think that's about all we have time for this week, Ron. It's again, it's great chat with you, and happy birthday to you and Stephanie.
As always, thank you so much.
So I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.